very few of us know them. They took an oath to protect us at home and abroad, so the rest of us can live safe and free. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities, and these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to American Warrior Radio. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. While not always obvious, musicians have always been a critical part of our military. Music is used to inspire troops, to build morale. It's even been used to frighten the enemy. Drum cadences keep marching troops in rhythm and were also used in the early days to signal war orders. Bugle calls carried long distances and can be heard over the din of battle. And of course, who could ever forget the images of bagpipers leading Allied troops into battle during the Second World War? In 1920, General John Pershing, discovering that the military band music of Great Britain and France was far superior to our own, even went so far as to implement a formal training program. To this day, one of the Army's most prestigious bands is called Pershing's Own. Music was thought so important that in 1941, the U.S. Army even established an emergency army music school at the War College. Nearly 500 bands of different types were fielded during that war. Today, we're going to tell you more about one of those bands and specifically about one musician. Richard Burton was a Juilliard-trained trumpet player who volunteered to serve in the war and was assigned to the 746th Air Force Band. The music you heard in the intro was recorded by Richard and his comrades in the Philippines in a tent just before their band was disbanded. Richard's musical legacy and that of his comrades might have been lost to history for all time were it not for another man, his grandson, Jason Burt. This is going to be heartwarming. Stay tuned. Jason is a history teacher at the River Delta Unified School District and is also the founder of a freelance research and producer of historical content for schools. Jason, welcome to American Warrior Radio.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me.
It's going to be fun. I considered myself a trumpet player once upon a time.
Did you now? You know, just hearing my grandpa on the radio would have been enough for me just now. That was amazing.
Well, and I'm going to ask you a favor, Jason. Just for the lawyers, could you just confirm that we were allowed to use that music?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
As long as you didn't play the whole thing, that was fine.
Okay, fair enough. Jason, a little bit about you. I mentioned you. You're a history geek, although you make money off of your history knowledge. Interesting to me, you're also a certified firefighter, so you really qualify for American Warrior Radio.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, I'm a former firefighter. I'm a current middle school teacher at Clarksburg Middle School. I plan to be a future author, and I'm probably the only teacher trying to produce a platinum album, but you might have to have your producer fact check me on that last one.
Well, we'll give it time and pray for the best. Now, a quick, speaking of my producer, quick question: are you any family relation to Alfred Burt of Christmas Carol fame?
Oh no, I don't believe so.
Okay, well, I mean, your grandpa was a hell of a trumpeter. Why, Jason? Why history? What was it about dusty old stuff that inspires you?
It brings about a feeling of nostalgia of a time long ago. I don't know. It just makes you feel like you're a kid again, even though some of this older stuff isn't really. I mean, the stuff I came across was my grandpa's, but it's still, I have this connection. So it's really all about personal connections and connecting the dots to make yourself feel like you're a part of that history.
Tell us a little bit more about your grandfather. I read some interviews, Jason, where you said, like, I guess many. Well, let me back up a little bit. My dad, his family's a farm family from South Dakota. My freshman year in high school, I think it was, I went back and spent a summer working on the farms. And down in the basement, I found a bunch of his old high school stuff, his Letterman's jacket and all these photos and stuff. And I'm embarrassed to say this. I'm 13 years old at the time. And it's almost like it struck me, oh, he had a life before I came along. And
yes.
In your case, I guess even as a child, you were thinking, hey, my grandpa served in the war, you know, Medal of Honor, you know, charged headlong into a machine gun nest. And it didn't really strike you until you became an adult, the importance of his role as a musician.
Yeah, you know, it's funny how that stuff works when you just realize, I mean, you know him as grandpa. You didn't meet him until he was 60 years old, but they had lives before that. And so, yeah, when I was a kid, I can remember, we all loved our grandpa. He was the best. And I can remember doing exercise with him in the morning. Me and my brother would jog behind him as he trotted around the house, but he would play his trumpet every day. And I could hear him playing his trumpet, but I wasn't listening is what I like to say. Like, I had no idea he was good at playing the trumpet or anything like that. It was just grandpa playing the trumpet. And as I got older and started taking history courses in high school and starting to love history, specifically World War II, I would think, well, I know grandpa was in the war. I wonder what he did. And I can remember distinctly being disappointed the moment that I found out that he didn't win the war on his own or get a Medal of Honor, as you said. And I found out he was in the band. And when I was younger, I was more of a European theater guy than a Pacific theater guy. So even that aspect was disappointing to high school me. But as I got older and I actually came across that first song you played, that trumpet solo was him. And the first time I heard that trumpet solo, I was probably 20 years old. And that was probably the first time I actually listened to my grandpa play the trumpet. And it was amazing. It's unreal every time I hear it.
Jason, was he very open about the war? Did he talk about it? Or like many of the veterans, he didn't? Or,
you know, he loved to talk about the war and about the band and about his experiences and things like that. And my sister and I actually interviewed him on film. I'm trying to figure out where that is, actually. And we were talking about different things. And a lot of the guys didn't like to talk about the war, but he loved to talk about it. But there was one thing that we touched on in this interview that I kind of pressed him on, not thinking it was that big of a deal. But he was a trumpet player. He played taps for people. And he started talking about, I think he even forgot that he had an emotional connection to this. But when he was down at March Field, there was a plane crash, some malfunction with a pilot who was a hero. I can't think of his name right now, but his plane was heading for a local school down there in Riverside. And he crashed in a different area in a field and ended up dying. And he had to play taps for the widow during the funeral. And he was starting to talk about this and he got very emotional and almost couldn't talk halfway through the story. And he said, no, we have to get off this. We have to get off this. And so yeah, even he was touched by certain aspects of the war.
It's interesting to me, Jason, in talking to, I mean, the hundreds of guests I've had on the show, very often you learn that you use the tools that you were given. And your grandfather, I mean, if anybody knows anything about music, Juilliard, that's the top of the heap. They don't just take, you know, guys like me at Juilliard. So he was definitely good at his craft. So he goes into the military and the Army takes a Juilliard-trained trumpet player and makes him a latrine technician?
Yeah, so he went to Juilliard after the war. So a lot of these guys in the band that weren't big-name guys, they were slated for different things. I actually had a post on this on the band's website when talking about a jazz legend, Dave Brubeck. For a lot of the times in war, you hear people were in the wrong place at the wrong time. For a lot of bandsmen that were in the war, they were in the right place at the right time. So my grandpa, he's a musician. He wasn't skilled at much else. I'm surprised they gave him a carbine rifle to take over there with him, but
Jason, listen, but we got to take a break here. But before we do that, tell folks that full Brubeck story, because anybody who knows that name, I mean, he's a legend, and that's an interesting story.
Yeah, so Brubeck was in the European theater, and he was not in the Army as a musician. He was actually a marksman. He was a brilliant shooter with his rifle, and he was slated to go into Patton's Third Army just out of Normandy, and he was at a training depot or a replacement depot. And the Red Cross showed up and with some women needed some entertainment. So he volunteered to play the piano there. And a colonel heard him and said, you're staying behind, you're going to form a band. So, I mean, he was going to go to the front and could have had a whole different life, but this colonel intervened and he became the great Dave Brubeck.
Wonderful. Amazing. That's what we're about here, all about storytelling. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Jason Burt. Jason is breathing new life into his grandfather's musical legacy. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're having a peach of a chat with Jason Burt. We're talking about his initiative to preserve the legacy of his grandfather and his comrades who served in the Second World War. Kind of out of the ordinary, what you hear here on American Warrior Radio. He was a musician and a darn good one. Jason, we were talking before the break about being in the right place at the right time, using Dave Brubeck as an example. What was your grandfather's right place at the right time that took him from a latrine technician to a musician?
So he started off at Fort Douglas in Salt Lake City, and he moved down to basic training over at a place called Camp Kearns, which is also in Utah. And he ran into a childhood friend there, Max Dalby, who happened to be in the marching band there, and he gave Max his serial number, and Max passed it along to his commanding officer. And my grandpa was slated to be a latrine technician somewhere, either in the Pacific or Europe, but he ended up on the right path and became a musician.
I don't know what a latrine technician does, but suffice to say, it's probably not something folks volunteer to do. Now, your grandfather, a patriot, he did. The situation came up where the Army needed musicians and they're looking to deploy them to the Pacific. But as I understand the story, Jason, everybody on the list who was qualified, they wanted a sergeant and a musician. But all those folks were married, and so your grandfather said, you know what, I'm single, I don't want to put them in harm's way, even though I'm a private, I volunteer, and they took him up on that offer.
Yeah, that's actually one of my favorite grandpa stories. It just describes the type of person he was his whole life. I actually told that story when I gave his eulogy a couple years ago. So he was down at March Field in Riverside, and the call came over for a trumpet player who had a sergeant's rating. And like you said, all of the sergeants down there were married. So my grandpa went over to his chief warrant officer's office and asked if he could take the place of that married man. And the chief warrant officer said if that was his desire, it could probably be done.
Well, and so he goes off to the jungle. Now, the 740, well, quick question, Jason. Why Air Force? Because back then it was the Army Air Corps. But when I see references, I see Air Force. Is that just, what is the reason for that disconnect and reference?
You know, I don't know specifically why. I think they just changed. I'd have to look. So Army Air Corps, I know, is a pre-World War II term. And World War II, it's specific to Army Air Force. And I don't know why they did that. Maybe it just sounded better.
Okay.
So this was the 746th Far East Air Force Band.
Okay, so their role was to play parade ceremonies and concerts, helped out with USO shows, and through the miracle of technology, if you really want to know what it was like being a band on the front lines, we've got Richard himself to share some thoughts.
We were finally taken to our area and assigned to our five-man tents. And after about 3 days, our instruments were finally unloaded from our ship. Our first rehearsal was with a USO group doing a stage show called Hell's a Poppin'. We did that show in three different locations on three different evenings. The last being up at the front, and that's the only way I can describe it. It was an area where all the palm trees had been blown in half. A makeshift stage had been set up, and when we arrived, there were GIs climbing up these half-blown-up palm trees to attach spotlights that could be used by the show people. All of the men who came to see the show came in their ponchos with their helmets on and their rifles sticking out. As the show progressed, and occasionally a little bit of rain would come down, but we were lucky it didn't close down the show. Across the ravine and on the other side of the mountain, there had be sounds of automatic weaponry, and you can see the flashes every once in a while as that the shooting made. So even while we performed on this little plateau, on the other side of the ravine, there was action going on, evidently. That was as close as I ever came to any type of fighting during that war.
Jason, that I couldn't help but, and you've got, thankfully, you've got a lot more from your grandpa, but that in 1 minute just so much describes what he faced, and really, to some extent, do you think amplifies the reason for musicians, and in particularly in that conflict, how important it was to give those Marines and soldiers and airmen and sailors a little bit of taste of home. You know, and they, literally, he mentioned they're grabbing their carbines while they're hearing this music.
Yeah, so the importance of the band and the music during war is to boost morale and to make these guys feel like they're a little closer to home and not on the other side of a ravine away from a battle. And so what those guys did was vital to morale and boosting those guys' spirits when they were away from home. And really and I think I've heard Dave Brubeck touch on this too, the hardest show you'll ever play, because these guys played for dignitaries and generals too, but the hardest show Brubeck ever said you'll play is for frontline soldiers, because they're afraid to turn on you and tell you what they really think of how you're playing. And for that to be his first show, to be on the other side of a ravine with bullets going off and shelling going off, and that'd be a tough gig.
There were a number of shows, and I think your grandfather mentioned the only, if I get this right, Jason, the only formation performance they ever did was for a very special group of young nurses. Tell us about them.
Yeah, so the Angels of Bataan, they're a famous group of nurses, Navy and Army nurses, who were in the Philippines right after Pearl Harbor occurred, and they were there with MacArthur. And so MacArthur left when the Japanese were taking the Philippines, and these nurses were taken prisoner for pretty much the duration of the war in the Pacific. And I want to say they were found and taken back by the U.S. in 1945, but this band that my grandpa was in, the 746th Far East Air Force, played the military formation. It was their only one for their awards ceremony, where they got their bronze stars and they got a presidential unit citation. And they're just an amazing group of women, and this band got to play for them. They were taken prisoner, and they still acted in their capacity as nurses, even as prisoners. They've got quite a remarkable story.
I tell you, I don't know that I could, being a former trumpet player myself, I don't know if I could play and cry at the same time. That must have been kind of a challenge.
I would think so. And my grandpa was one to be a crier too. So I'm sure he would have been while he was playing if he wasn't trying to fight back the tears, that's for sure.
Well, I just want to emphasize that, you know, to be good at anything, you have to practice, whether you're a soldier or whether you're a musician. And listening to some of your tapes there, it kind of made me smile. Your grandpa, you know, rather than just sort of sitting around doing nothing like some of the other musicians in the band, he would sneak off into the jungle and practice his trumpet. Maybe not the safest and smartest move in the Pacific Theater, but he was that committed to his craft. I mean, what, 3 hours a day?
Yeah, I don't know if you can imagine that. He knew that he was going to do something with music the rest of his life. It was the best talent he had, and he knew he was going to use it. So he chose to practice every day rather than play poker or pinochle or chess or whatever the guys were playing. And he would sneak off outside of camp into the jungle so nobody would hear him, so he wouldn't disrupt anybody in their whatever they were doing, which, I mean, he tells a story when he snuck off outside of camp and took his trumpet to go play. And he heard a noise in the bushes, and his heart stopped because he thought he was going to have to defend himself. And he reached for his Marine knife that he had strapped to his belt. And out of the shrub, out of the bush, this beautiful bird indigenous to the Philippines flies out and just spooked him.
I'd rather have that story than what could have been the other one. Jason, in doing my prep for this show, I read an article of another member of that band who was a tuba player, but the Army decided he should play bass. And he describes the challenges he had getting his instrument back to the United States after the war. And in that article, they mentioned they just plain dumped a lot of these instruments in the ocean, which is a shame. But some of the films I've seen of you on television interviews, there is a trumpet. Is that your grandfather's trumpet that he played?
That is his trumpet, yes.
Oh, wow. It's a beautiful instrument.
Yes.
I'm glad he kept it. Now, as we come up to that point in time where the war is over, they are literally disbanding the 746th band. Whose idea was it to go into a tent and get the band together and just perform some music? And back then, keep in mind, folks, it was called a wire recorder, correct?
Yes, it was a wire recording. And I don't know who had the idea. I know they had a guy who came around that had some wire, and I think they just did it to record together, I think my grandpa mentioned. And so before they left, they were in their performance tent, and there was a few of the locals around, and they played for these guys while they were in their performance tent. And some of the guys in the band were new, so I guess they had people move in and out of the band here and there. My grandpa was with them for the whole time. But some of the guys were seeing that music for the first time as well. So he says mistakes were made, and I'm the only one in my family that never learned to play an instrument. So I can't tell if any mistakes were made. If they did, they're very subtle to me.
Well,
but
I tell you what, Jason, when we come back, we'll give folks an opportunity to decide for themselves. How's that?
That sounds good.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bula Garcia. We're talking with Jason Burt. Jason is on a quest to preserve the legacy of his grandfather and his comrades. You're going to hear more about that just intriguing and heartwarming initiative when we come back. Stick around. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bula Garcia. One of the men you heard in that song is Richard Burt, a very accomplished trumpet player. They were performing that in a tent in the Philippines, and luckily someone was there with something called a wire recorder to record it. We're talking with Jason Burt, Richard's grandson. Jason, your grandfather was fortunate or perceptive enough to bring those recordings back stateside with him. And that kind of gets into the heart now of what you're doing now for us. What was it about five dusty albums you found in your grandfather's attic, that was an exciting day for you and your family?
You know, it was exciting for me personally, because I'd known about these records. We'd all known about these records since I was alive. The recordings you're playing, he had transferred the ones he had solos on in the 80s as part of his own personal history project. So we knew they existed, but as he got older, I think he just kind of forgot where he put them. So we never really knew where they were. And then we came across them when we were clearing out his house after he and my grandma both passed away. And it was just sheer excitement, because by then I knew his talent, and I knew military history was my thing. So it was just pure excitement when we came across him.
So for you, that'd be the equivalent of finding just a chest full of gold and gems. Now, Jason, Ben gets at least one dumb question every show, and here it is. You find these records, and you're going to play them. Where does someone find a record player nowadays? Seriously,
you know, that is a great
next to
question.
The typewriter, maybe.
That's not a dumb question at all. I actually have a coworker who I'm friends with, Glenn Dion. He lives about a block over from me, and he is a vinyl record junkie, and he has a record player. And I told him about the records, and one day he's just like, let's see if they work. So I borrowed the record player from him and played them, and they all work.
What was it like? I mean, because you're talking 75-year-old, 50-year-old. I mean, you're talking old vinyl. And when that needle first hit the vinyl, you might have, did you think it wouldn't work? Or what was your feeling right then when you heard those first notes?
It was the same feeling I had when the first time I heard my grandpa's 80s recordings, where I heard him do a trumpet solo and finally discovered, hey, you know, grandpa's a really good trumpet player. It was just like, you're in a room alone, and if you close your eyes, it's like grandpa's doing a private concert for you, and he's still here. So it's a pretty amazing feeling. And just knowing that they worked, I knew I was going to, I don't know much, they're 75 years old, and I wanted to find out what was on them, but I didn't want to ruin them. So I've only played them once since I became the owner of them.
So here's your quiz. What are the three speeds? 33, 45, and?
78.
And I'm guessing these were 78s.
These are 78s. If you started with 78 and another number, I probably wouldn't have gotten the third number.
So, Jason, fools and entrepreneurs, you find, God, you know, God loves them both. You find these dusty records, and how does a young man like you get from 5 or 6 dusty albums in the attic to a Grammy-produced platinum-selling album? Walk us through how your mind works, sir.
So the first thought I had was, how rare are these? And I researched, and I couldn't find anything on... You can find plenty on the Glenn Millers of World War II, but you can't find any recordings of a frontline army band who was overseas and actually in the war. So my research said this is pretty rare. So my next step was, well, who's going to buy this? Well, I contacted the World War II Museum in New Orleans and said, here's what I have. Would you be interested in making an album out of this and putting it on the shelf? Is this something people would buy? And they emailed me back and said, yeah, we're interested in something like that, but we don't produce music. So you're kind of on your own in that regard. So it just kind of evolved from there into this bigger project.
You've got some pretty amazing partners, Lursen Mastering. And if folks go to their website, I mean, these folks are the top of the heap. They've won Grammys and, I mean, every award that can be won. Was there something in particular about that agency that struck you, that, or they were the first ones to say yes?
Yeah, so after some back and forth with the World War II Museum, they mentioned something about, you know, if you do an album, we want to see the finished product, but it can't look amateurish, because even though that's what these guys are, amateur musicians, because if somebody sees it on a shelf and it looks amateurish, they just won't buy it. And I said, you know, he's right. If I just put this on the shelf, it's just going to get passed by, because nobody knows who these guys are. They're not Glenn Miller. People want to buy the Glenn Miller stuff. And so I needed somebody who was at the top of their field, who had won awards. And so I started to research Grammy Award winners for Best Historical Album, which has to do with sound engineers who remaster and clean up albums and have them come out again for sale. And so I emailed 3 or 4 of them, and 3 emailed back. But Gavin Lursen and his studio, his studio manager called me and said, hey, we want to work with you. Gavin and Ruben are both really excited about this project. It's all they can talk about this morning. And so that made the choice really easy, especially what they called. And it just tickles their professional spine bone to be able to do something so unique.
Have you seen the documentary The Cold Blue?
I have not.
I would highly recommend it. It's sort of a parallel path that you're on, where he went and found these old, I don't know, they weren't lost, they were in a library somewhere, but they're the old films, World War II films, shot with the 8th Air Force in bombing missions over Germany. And he remastered them and put in some interviews with a crew. And it's just very, very powerful stuff. And I hate to say that war is beautiful, but these images, I'd highly recommend you find that and watch it, Jason. He's been on American Warrior Radio, too, and it sounds like sort of a parallel track to what you're doing. What, I mean, so at the end game, once you get this produced and out, It's also a fundraiser for, what are you going to do with the proceeds?
So it's also a fundraiser. In the beginning talks with the USO, who this band played shows with out in the Pacific and who share kind of the same goal as this band, where they're trying to make life overseas a little easier for soldiers and make them feel like they're more at home. So some of the proceeds will go to that, and some will go to hopefully future projects like this. I love teaching history. I'll probably be a lifer teaching history at Clarksburg Middle School, but doing this kind of stuff is unbelievable too.
Jason, I am a fan of history. I like you, I guess, frankly, we probably got started in much the same time in our lives, and I started with the European theater as well when it came to World War II. You are a professional in the field. I want to just sort of lead into the break in our next segment, because like your grandfather, I'm going to sneak off into the jungle and practice for 3 hours here. why is it so important to keep and preserve and to get this stuff out there for not just those of us who, well, I mean, I wasn't around during World War II, neither were you, but for past and current future generations?
Just so they know the importance of things and where you came from in life. And my grandpa was smart enough to be a steward of this unique item for 75 years, and now it's on to me. One of the goals of this project is to shed some light on this particular, on the band and the music during World War II, because everybody talks about the battles and the big names like MacArthur, but nobody really knows that much about the band and the music. And at the same time, I want it to be a catalyst for students to spark a love of history and their own personal history and see what they have in their attic kind of thing. And so they can connect the dots to, from them to people who experience certain things in history and make it more personal so that they just develop this love of history.
Jason, where can people find out more about your project, and do you need us to help in any way?
So right now the band has two social media accounts, one on Twitter at 746 FEAF Band and 746 Far East Air Force Band on Facebook. And right now I'm going to Lurson Studios later this month to actually create the album and stuff. But the goal right now is to keep building a following and get people excited about this. And the broad goal of this project is to raise money for USO, but it's also to get recognition for a generation that we're losing more and more every day, these World War II veterans. And the whole driving force behind this is how cool would it be to get a World War II frontline army band to become a platinum selling artist, whether it be one individual song on there or whether it be the whole album.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're speaking with Jason Burt about a very intriguing and heartwarming project. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the importance of this and other elements about never forgetting our history. Stick around. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. We're chatting with Jason Burt. Jason is a history teacher, a historian, and in many ways a fellow with a pioneering spirit, and I really, really appreciate that. Jason, the reason we do American Warrior Radio is I'm just a big believer in the power of storytelling. I grew up the son of missionaries, and very often the indigenous tribes and other folks we spent time with, it was just stories were the way of teaching and of carrying forward messages to the future. Years ago, I worked for the local Chamber of Commerce, and we used to produce a Man and Woman of the Year program. Every chamber across the country probably does that. But it was my job to go out and interview the recipients and produce a little 30-minute video. Video, folks, that's kind of like record players. Same thing. Back in the olden days, I use the air quotes. So one of the recipients that year was Gilbert Ronstadt, who is Linda Ronstadt's grandfather, father. And he just a wonderful guy, and he was kind of lonely. So after I produced the video, I'd pop in every once in a while and just sit with him, visit with him. And of course, we always had to start the conversation with a small glass of tequila, he said, to kind of, you know, warm up the throat. And then he would launch into just these amazing stories of things that he and his friends would do as kids. And just, it was wonderful stuff. Well, when he passed, I asked the family, I said, did anyone ever write that stuff down or record it? And the answer was no. And I thought, what a shame. I mean, what a tragedy, because that's lost forever now. And I want to congratulate you, sir, because you are taking some major steps to make sure that doesn't happen in the case of your grandfather.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's half the battle is what I'm doing to try and push it forward. But I mean, my grandpa did the hardest part and had the wherewithal to preserve this stuff for 75 years. And to, I mean, even that world, that narration you played earlier, and to, I mean, he did that stuff off the cuff, this 30 minutes of talking about his war experience on a tape player in the 80s. So he was really a big believer in storytelling and telling his story and preserving it. He did it mostly for his family to know about it, but I'd very much like to share his talents and his story with the world.
Well, we're glad that we can be part of that. Let's go up to the 30. Well, quick question. Are any of his former band members, are any of them still around, do you know?
I am not aware of any. I'm still researching to find guys that were in there. I actually read that same article you were talking about, Mr. Vivian out in Tulsa, but he passed away just last year in 2019, so I just missed him.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll keep working together to try and get all those stories out there, Jason. One, kind of 30,000 foot level, you were part of an interesting group generation in the United States of America. You were in high school when the September 11th attacks happened. I have volunteered for several years with what we believe is the largest memorial tower challenge climb in the country using military and first responders. And last year, for the first part of the ceremonies we do at the tower climb, as we have young people that take their first oath of enlistment there on the field. And last year, for the first time, it just really struck us, these are young people who may not have been alive when those attacks happened, and yet they're stepping up to carry the burden in what is now our nation's longest war. What is your perspective of where we are now versus the differences that you saw from your history and your research in World War II?
The difference between like World War II and now in...
I guess I'm after your perspective, because I mean, we are still in the longest war in our nation's history, and you couldn't tell, I don't think, unless you interact quite a bit with military families. I mean, out there on the streets.
I don't think you could. That, I mean, it's been going on since 9/11. So I think, and a lot of the people that are signing up weren't around. I remember taking when I went back to school after the fire academy, and I'd be sitting in classes and eventually we'd get to 9/11 in the contemporary history classes, and there were just kids who were in kindergarten in the same class with me who was like, I don't remember what happened. So I think it's lost on a lot of people who were born after but are still signing up. The difference between the two times is pretty stark. I mean, in World War II, it was a full-on effort from everyone. Everyone had a role to play in the war: the band, the soldiers, the Marines, the nurses. Even kids were collecting scrap metal and rubber. I mean, there's nobody collecting anything right now for the military effort. I mean, you probably see some similarities right now with the COVID-19, how we don't have any toilet paper on the shelf or things of that nature. So rationing might look a little familiar to someone who was around during World War II, but it's such a big difference between World War II and now.
Jason, to borrow a military phrase, as a history teacher and researcher and producer of information for schools, you're on the pointy end of the spear when it comes to teaching history. What is the danger to our society or to any society of losing touch with their history?
So when you lose touch with the stories of your past and things like that, it just becomes so much easier for you to move on to the next whatever it is, or to give up on your society as a whole. I think I was emailing with you earlier, watching the Marvel movies in order, and we just finished Captain America 3, the Civil War episode, and the antagonist in that movie, and just a regular guy, he's got no superpowers or anything, but he's telling how he's bringing down the Avengers, that there's more powerful people in the world who would try to take on the Avengers but have failed, more powerful than him. And the only way for you to topple an empire where it's gone forever is to take it apart from the inside. So I think you kind of, it becomes easier to do that when you forget about your past and all that sort of thing.
Very, very wise words. We're running out of time here, Jason. We've got about 2 minutes left. Let's go back to bands in the military. Things not going so well for bands. What is the status of military bands right now? I mean, everybody's getting cut everywhere.
Yeah, so I think military bands, I was talking with a former airman who was in the band, and I was doing research on this project, and I was having a conversation with him. And he said bands have been dwindling, the numbers, since probably the late 70s and the 80s, that there's just fewer and fewer bands. And it's just one of those things. He thinks that music is the first to cut, just like in education, the music is the first to get cut, the arts and things like that. And another contributing factor is, in today's society, a lot of kids aren't picking up instruments at 5 years old, and starting when they're five, they're getting to high school and thinking, oh, I'll just try this out. So by the time 4 years later comes around to do their Army or Marine audition for the band, they're just not at the talent level they need to be to play in the military band.
Well, I started on a flutophone. You're not a musician. You wouldn't get that. But you will get this quick story that only you might appreciate, Jason. Years ago, I was involved with organizing Navy Week events, and the Navy, one of the assets they send to the community is the Navy Band. I had heard the Air Force Band perform a couple years earlier, and it was all World War II kind of swing stuff. Okay, so I organized a concert at our local historic theater. It was sold. I mean, it can't be sold out because you couldn't charge for tickets, but basically all the tickets are distributed. And I had targeted my marketing toward what I thought this band was. Mostly older veterans, World War II folks. So I get in there for sound check about an hour before the band is to kick off. And much to my surprise, turns out this Navy band was the band they used for recruitment. So their playlist was more along the lines of Black Eyed Peas, some other non-World War II music. And let's just say when they're in their third song, the first 10 rows had become vacant all of a sudden as people couldn't turn their hearing aids down very much. Jason, thank you so much for what you're doing and for joining us here on American Warrior Radio. And please stay in touch and let us know what we can do to help you on this mission.
Will do. Thanks so much for having me, Ben.
Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast and others may be found at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Over 250 stories there. Check us out on Facebook, on Twitter. We're on Instagram at Warrior Radio TUC. Until next time, all policies and procedures are to remain in place. Be safe.